Welcome to the Pussy Parlor Podcast. I am your host, Kitty Velour. I am a pole dance artist, glittery showgirl, and a pole dance and floor work instructor. Here at the parlor, I interview new guests each week, including pole dancers, strippers, showgirls, sex workers, and cabaret creatures of all kinds. Our parlor guest today is Coco Deville, an award-winning, international, critically acclaimed cabaret chameleon. Coco is forever the scintillating siren of the cabaret stage, with her trademark, innovative and refreshing twists on the burlesque genre, fusing body positivity, sharp wit, dynamic dancing. She immerses her crowds in the true nature of courageously creative cabaret. In this episode, we talk about burlesque perceptions in the noughties, black nerd culture references, drag kingdom, and performing in Berlin. Welcome to the Pussy Parlor.
Hello, hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
How did you start performing?
So I came into burlesque from my interest in feminist performance art at theatre, when I was at university, because I've got a BA honours degree in contemporary theatre and choreographic practices. And part of my degree was essentially devising work, so how to take an idea and bring it out onto the stage. And I just remember a couple of modules about feminist performance art, and it just resonated with me. And I just really became so obsessed with gender identity and gender politics and femininity and extreme femininity, and then learning about burlesque and how it was really embodying all of these kind of concepts and stuff. And then, it just kind of went from reading about it and then working with other performers and the people on my course and stuff and creating shows. And then just keeping it going. And now it's my job. So it's great.
Yeah, amazing. Do you remember your first show? Was it when you were at uni?
Yeah, so I started off in a troupe and we sort of devised a show, which was a theatre show with burlesque elements to it. And this was way back in the day when burlesque was still no one really knew what it was. And so, we toured, we took the show to Edinburgh Fringe, which was really exciting. But then like a band, we just had a big sit down going, I don't want to do it anymore. Because, the burlesque scene wasn't a scene. So it was such a slog, every night, having to deal with people's sort of issues around nudity on stage. And also, we weren't totally nude, but tassels and all that kind of thing. And also our troupe had men in it as well. So people weren't actually ready to see semi-naked men on stage as well. So for some of the members, they were we're not going to do it anymore. And then there's a couple of us, that were no, I really like it. I kind of want to stay. I want to see how far I can get with this cabaret burlesque world. And I'm just so glad that I kind of kept with it. And it's amazing how the scene's evolved. It's insane.
That's really interesting that you say that, because I guess the revival of burlesque is very new then. Do you know what year that you was? Was it in the noughties that you were doing this with the troupe?
Yeah, so I first started doing burlesque back in 2006 for me. I knew that the revival was around. So there were quite a few clubs and performers around. There was a scene, nice and bubbling over, and there was a huge scene over in America. So it's been going around, I think since the 90s. But I think, there's been so many sort of igniters of the scene, because, as burlesque started to kind of bubble up, you had, a lot more sort of that sort of female empowerment became a bit more of a mantra, and, just women owning their sexuality a little bit more, and it becoming more of a popular culture thing. I remember the time that you could buy corsets from Primark, you're like, what? This is crazy. People are just really interested in it. And And you had all like the bands like the Pussycat Dolls and stuff. I remember when they came out and they were a burlesque troupe. And so then when it started to gamble forward, you know, it's just totally exploded into this wild, crazy industry.
Yeah, it's grown quite quickly because when you think about it, it's not really that long ago, and things have definitely changed now, because you were saying that people weren't really fully ready to see all these kind of nude, semi-nude people on stage, whereas now I think it's, you know, there's cabarets it's everywhere, enough. Right? Yeah, yeah. It's every day. Tell us a little bit about some of your burlesque acts and how you kind of conceptualize your routines and what's your process?
Yeah, so for me, I love being inspired, you know, and I love being inspired just by life and also myself. I know that might sound be like, oh, I'm inspired by me, but it's just like, you know, when you look in the mirror and it's just like, oh, you know, you've got, you know, who am I? What am I? What am I about? What am I about? How does the world see me? All these kind of questions. And I think the cabaret stage is a great place to kind of explore this thought process. For example, one of my sort of most popular acts is my Geek Chic, you know, Sexy and You Know It act.
Yeah, I love this act. Yeah.
And, you know, like, so we were like, what is this about? And I think it's because for me, like, everyone comments of how curvaceous my body is and how beautiful I am. It's like, oh my God, okay, you can like wear absolutely anything and still look hot. And I just remember it's just like, you know what? I want to push that. I want to see how far can I go before my body starts being sexual and sexy and you just see me. I wonder if I can play around with that. And, you know, understanding myself is like, I'm really nerdy and I love being awkward, and that's very much who I am. And I love dance and I love being nerdy about dancing. And it's something that I think people don't realize, like, you can be nerdy about absolutely anything. It's just some subject matters are cooler than others. But like, yeah, I really love cheesy dance routines. I love how freeing it is for people when they get down with their bad self and all that kind of jazz. So yeah, I created that act just to kind of incorporate certain aspects of myself and that sort of freedom that I have.
Could you describe that act for listeners who have never seen it before?
So basically, it's to the song That's Sexy and I Know It. And I just come on and I'm in total nerd, conventional nerd attire. So high-waisted trousers, you know, with a big chunk, you know, like they're cropped. So you can see my socks, and I'm either wearing brogues or some trainers or whatever, just flats, basically. Wearing a tank top with rainbow braces, which are a little signal. The rainbow braces are a little signal to Urkel, which was a popular character in a sitcom in America. And he was a really famous black geek. And so it's just like a little signal there. So it's just like coming on and being very clownish and very awkward and having that little interaction with the audience and stuff. And then the sort of the chorus drops, and then I go into very structured, like, choreographed routine. And then the act breaks, like, turns into like a mega mix, like a really, you know, like a fun
so
wedding.
Good.
Great. And it's just like, you know, embracing different dances that, you know, that we hate to love, you know what I mean? It's like, so it goes into, you know, Not Unusual by Tom Jones. So I do the Carlton dance, which is another nod to another black nerd out there. So in popular culture, and actually the Carlton dance is really hard to do. but yeah, so within the act, it's like I'm doing all the dance routines from like the time warp to Agadoo, but then also paying homage to, like, you know, voguing as well. So I actually do voguing moves and things. And then, yeah, and then there's a point when the act where I just collapse in exhaustion and ridiculousness. I think it's the bit where I'm doing the time warp, and in the dance, everyone collapses on the floor at the end anyway. So it's a little nod to that. And then there's like a little moment where the infamous, like, the song called The Stripper plays, you know, And so it's like a little nod to the audience of like, you're still, don't worry, you are still watching a burlesque act. You know, don't worry, I'm not just someone having a lovely time, having a lovely dance on stage. This is still a burlesque act. And so when I pick myself up and then I'll start doing very traditional burlesque movements, because then it's just a little nod to the audience of like, yeah, burlesque is also another practice, is another dance style. This is something that is, it's learned, you know, it's not just, we're not just walking about, like this is something that is very, that's got its own history and rhythm and flow and shapes around it. Yeah, so I do that. And then end up doing my little striptease where I end up in a mankini. And now it's rhinestoned. But yeah, like, so going back to what I was saying before, like, it's just because, like, it's just was the most ridiculous thing that I could think of. And it's like the most unsexiest thing in the world. There's no one looks sexy in a mankini. But it's so fun. And it's like tassel twirling in a mankini. I'm wearing like high socks by this point and my brogues. And it's just ridiculous. And I think, you know, and I'm tassel twirling and doing loads of tricks. And it's like, yay. But it's just so fun and it's so freeing. And I think, you know, I love creating work that makes people enjoy themselves and just lose themselves for a little bit and just bring so much fun and quirky energy. And
yeah,
it's one of my favorite acts to do.
Yeah, it's so, it's kind of so different, but then it's very much that traditional style of burlesque, which was a parody. You're kind of being a parody, but also having those classic striptease elements of like tassel twirling and actual like stripping. But I love hearing you describe it because it's very textured and multi-layered and all these references in it. I think you've obviously really thought about it all the way around, and it's cool to hear you describe it because I've seen this act before and I just love it because it is just really fun to watch.
Oh, thank you. It's just like, yeah, it's great. Like, I think I just really like creating really rich work like that that's so multifaceted, because the thing is, when you're, you know, for a member of the audience, you just never know what you're going to get, and you never know anyone's personal experiences and everything like that. So if you can create work that can reach as many people as possible, and everyone is going to have their different interpretation of it, but if you can like hit home on some level, then that's you know what I think is like our responsibility as creatives is to create really in-depth work, and it's such a great feeling.
Yes, I love it. I would also really love to talk about your drag king act as well. I don't know if I've seen you do it, but I've seen you, seen pictures of you as a drag king. What's your drag king name again?
Okay, so my drag king name is Richard Deville, or his friends call him Dick Deville. Great. Yeah, and like it started off like originally just going to parties in drag and then working with drag kings in general. So like a really good friend of mine who I go way back with is a wonderful performer called Adam All, and run a night called Boy Box. So Adam and Appledoria run a night called Boy Box, and where they, you know, where it's a platform for drag kings. And also they're really, really wonderful and really, really open in the fact that they allow performers, like female identifying performers, to explore that side of drag kingdom. So they might not have thought about it before, but it's like, you know, should I have a go? And they've created a platform so you can do that. And so when I've performed with them, it's just like, oh my God, like, this is pretty cool, you know? So like my geek act that I explained to you before, it's like I originally performed that and just kind of changed the genders around a little bit and made it a bit more gender fluid. And that was really fun. And then it just kind of everything revolved from there. And I was like, actually, I really enjoyed the feeling of being a drag king. I really enjoyed like this whole other world that is now open to me. Like there's wonderful levels of masculinity that I now really freaking get. And yeah, so Dick Deville is very much, you know, inspired by people like Bootsy Collins and Rick James and Prince, you know. It's that level of masculinity that is just so in your face and fabulous, but still very male. And I find that so deeply fascinating. And it's great to explore that. And I look forward to bringing him to the stages more often, because like Drag Kingdom in comparison to drag queens, it's still very, very small. So it actually having the exposure, it's still got a little bit of a journey to go. But it's still like people are really embracing what it actually is and yeah, what it means to be masculine.
Yeah, I think it ties in well with the conversation we had before we started recording about masculine and feminine energies and, you know, how we all have both within us. Mm-hmm. How do you feel when you perform as more femme presenting as to when you perform in a more masculine way? Like, how does that change the feel of the performance?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's okay. It's like, I think when I'm doing sort of more masculine energy based performances, when I say that, it's not just the case of like when I'm doing a drag king. I've got a few acts where they're quite overtly, you know, not sexual. Like, yeah, actually, yes, I've got acts that are very overtly sexual, but they are really powerful at the same time. So like my voodoo priestess is a great example of that. And I feel like I have a lot of masculine energy in that because it's commanding the stage. And it's one of those moments where you kind of go, what is masculine, what is feminine, all this kind of stuff. But to me, it's just like that dominance of space. And that's, I feel, is a very masculine energy to walk into a space and go, I own this room. And I love that feeling because like in my day-to-day life, I never have that feeling, or I very rarely have that feeling. But I love the experience of the cabaret space and community and the industry allows for that energy to be totally embraced. So it's like not only for the audience are they, you know, experiencing a new world, it's like it's the same space for the performer as well. But then like when I do, you know, when I have access to this very super feminine energy and very sort of quite sweet and fluffy or like really nurturing or like doing more comedy, clowny, happy stuff, that's also an amazing energy as well. And it's just nice to be able to flip between it. And I think as well, like it's great to kind of display that for a crowd because, you know, one of the joys of burlesque and cabaret is that, you know, people leave inspired and empowered by what they've seen. So, you know, and I think it's great for people to explore their masculine and feminine sides. And it's great for us as artists to kind of start sprinkling those seeds for people when they watch.
I think as well, for many women who performers, it's that moment where you get to take up space and just like completely spread out and like you said, dominate an area which you don't really get to do normally in everyday life, you know, living in the patriarchy. So that's something that's, I think, quite empowering for women and, you know, actually all kind of minorities to really take up space on that cabaret stage and be like, this is my time to say things that I feel and I want to express. And I love that about performing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely.
And you love to travel and you perform all over. Do you have any favorite places that you've performed, favorite shows that you've done?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite places is, well, my favorite cities is Berlin. If you've not been to Berlin, go to Berlin. And there's a venue there called the Zum Starken August. And it's great because it's a cool, quirky, little funky circus bar. And it has like a teeny tiny stage in the corner. And it's really surreal because the back of the stage is a huge mirror. And the other side of the stage, there's a big window. And they usually have people like on the side. And because of the venue is quite, you know, has lots and lots of people in. So the audience are really close. You can see every single face. You can see every facial expression. You can overhear conversations, all that kind of stuff. And with the mirror as well, basically, there's nowhere to hide. So you have to you have to give all of your energy. And the fact that it's a little corner on the side, so you're having to perform essentially nearly on a round. Like, you know, you're surrounded by people, and they're all different levels as well. And so you've got some people that are like right below you, and you've got some people that are nearly at the same height as the stage. It's all a bit surreal, but it's just about like kind of pushing yourself out of the comfort zone, because I think sometimes when you're a performer, we get so focused on I am performing here and you are there. But when you're just like kind of thrust into the middle of people and energy, you have to kind of keep everyone entertained, and it can be really hardcore, but I think it's great. And also with burlesque, and you have that moment where you have to turn your back and do the little saucy little reveal. But the fact there's a mirror there, you can't do that. So you have to kind of figure out, it's like, how can I be teasing even though there's nowhere for me to hide? Da, da, da. And also the fact of like, you have to be like 100% in it as well, because, you know, I've seen performers where you can tell through their eyes that they're just going through the motions. And it's just like their energy is somewhere else right now, but it's not with the crowd. So it's like,
because a lot of times when you're performing, when you turn around, you can kind of like relax your face.
Yeah.
And, just be like, and then you turn around again, you're like back on, face is on.
It's like, hey, hello. But yeah, like the fact with that venue, you can't do that. You have to bring it. You have to bring it. And but then it's just like when you leave, you're like, huh, I'm just like, I just get so pumped. It's like, yeah, huh. And because you have like the dressing room is like right at the other end of the bar, so you have to like walk through the crowd to get to the place, so you're still having to be in your zone. And it is such a like, yeah, I just did that. You just enjoyed that. And sit down.
Amazing. I love it. What sort of challenges have you come across in your career?
Quite a few. Well, just in regards to my race, really. So when I first started, I was like one of the only performers of colour in the entire UK, which I'm glad to say, like, now is not a thing. There's quite a few, you know, performers from all corners of walks of life, and there's so many different types of body on the stage. It's glorious, absolutely glorious. But I remember first starting, and it was just like, so you're a burlesque dancer, but you don't look like a burlesque dancer. Because everyone, when they thought of burlesque back in the day, they thought Dita Von T, so very pale, jet black hair, that very rockabilly kind of look as well, because that was a big thing back in the day. And so there was like a little bit of apprehension booking me, because people didn't know what I would do, because I didn't fit into the aesthetic. So I think that's one of the reasons why I really pushed being a comedian, because I was like, well, you know, that's something I'm really good at, making people laugh and feeling really good. But then it's like, you know, this is what I'm bringing to the table. So I don't fit into that category that you created. So I'll create my own, or like I'll be part of this side, you know, because comedy, burlesque, it's actually harder to do, to make people feel good and happy and giggle and laugh whilst being naked. is a challenge. So yeah, so I started, you know, working my way through the circuit and through humor, and that started opening doors for me as a person of color. And then when I got, you know, when I started to establish myself and put my name down, boom, I am Coco DeVille in the circuit. That's when I started to create work that would embrace my ethnicity. So yeah, so my voodoo priestess is one. My hip hop bunny is another. And I'm like one of the first people to use hip hop in the burlesque circuit in the UK. And, you know, and it's actually kind of really weird to say that now, because it seems like such a ridiculous thing, because it's like, yeah. And then also with that, I've got my disco act, which is like a big Studio 54 kind of homage. And that was also like a little nod to sort of queer culture within disco as well. And because I just felt like, oh my God, there's still like so many other subcultures that aren't being referenced or represented in mainstream burlesque. So I'm going to start creating work to kind of bring these other worlds into this circuit. And also I remember thinking to myself, like, why isn't many people, you know, using things like disco for their acts? Like, it used to be just very much jazz, you know, which is cool, but there's so many different genres of music that I thought would be like so empowering and stuff. But one of the big things for me, having sort of racial sort of prejudice and just reluctance to book me. But then once people started to see my work and started to appreciate my creativity and how much depth I created, you know, that I put into each of my pieces, people were like, okay, cool. Yeah. And I'm just glad that now there's so many different types of people on that stage, and it's absolutely freaking beautiful. Yeah, and I think the only other thing that has, you know, has been a bit of an issue in my past is money. Like, people don't realize if you've got no money, things can be really tough. But the thing is, what I love about the burlesque scene is that how resourceful you become and how much DIY. People have no idea the amount of sewing on things and putting, you know, and you know, rhinestoning things and like finding sequins in your house just randomly, like weeks after you've finished the project and all these kind of things. But you just kind of figure out a way when you haven't got much money, and then it all, you know, it all works out.
Yeah, money is always an issue, isn't it? It's hard, I think, as well, in the when you're an artist, for people to give good fees for what we do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love seeing into your mind, into your world of, you know, your acts, and you're such a pioneer. And I think that's why I love watching you perform, because what you do is so different, and you really bring to the table something really unique and innovative and breaking away from like the kind of samey traditional kinds of performances. So yeah, I just think you're amazing.
Oh, I love you. It's like, it really means the world to me to hear that. Like, yeah, because one, I just love you bit to bits in general as a human, as a fellow artist, and with what you do, I have like so much respect for you, and it's brilliant. I think it's just a joy when you are creating something that is not only this is your practice, but it's something that you really freaking love and you get energized by it. It's that feeling of knowing when you're creating and you're putting something out there and you're just like, yes, this is who I am, this is what I'm bringing to the table in this world, you know. It's great.
Yeah. And like, art comes from your soul, isn't it? So it's your way of expressing your inner thoughts and feelings. So it's very precious to see it all come together on the stage and all the sparkles. This takes us really nicely onto the love, learn and dream section. What do you love most about your job?
The community of performers. Like, I've made some amazing friends, like yourself. Just meeting the most insanely awesome people, like such, you know, just so much diversity, like just on a physically and mentally. There's been so many different types of genre of person that I never knew existed, and there's such a support network as well. And I know on a personal level I've gone through a lot of really not nice things, but soon as I get to work and get to the performance space, I can have a conversation with certain people or whatever, and people can pick up my energy. And it's like, oh, you're okay. And it's just like, people can really sort of sense, basically, because your purpose is to bring out a really great show. So if you can feel like when someone's not in a good place, and you're like, right, how can we help them, that person out? And I felt that a lot, and I've done that to other people as well. And it's that lovely, that care and consideration for each other that I really, really relish. And I absolutely adore it. And I love it's part of my job.
Yeah. Like,
being surrounded by awesome humans, part of my job.
What is the biggest lesson that you've learned along your journey?
Biggest lesson? I think not to take yourself seriously.
Like, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's like Because, yeah, I started off in clowning and started being ridiculous because I thought it was just like, this is actually quite ridiculous. I'm having a lovely time, you know, because I didn't think you could make a living out of it. So I was just like, I'm having a lovely time, la, 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 la. But then it was just like, no, I'm an artist. I'm a creative, like, ha, ha. And then it just stopped being fun. Cabaret, it's like that moment when you're like, okay, I've got everything choreographed. And 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4. But when you're so in your head and you're wanting everything to be perfect, that's when I feel that little nuggets of what it means to be a live performer gets lost. And I think when you are in the audience, you know, that's what we want is we want to see these moments and stuff, you know, we want to see you, we want to see inside your soul. And I think that was the thing. I did go through a stage in my career where I had so many costume malfunctions. I was making a lot of stuff myself and I didn't really know what I was doing. So I'm just like, oh, it'll be fine. I'll just say this here. And then like, as I'm dancing, I can feel it falling apart. I'm like, oh, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep my arm really still on this side and be all like, oh, you know, I'm just going to do lots of shoulder like rolls and stuff instead of hand rolls. But it was just moments like, oh my god, this is ridiculous. And yeah, the amount of tassel twirling moments, I'm just like, yeah, giving it some welly, spinning them around, and then the tassel will go wee, and I'll just like it was just leave my cube and it'll just go off into the air, and it's just like just like cupping over. I remember one time I had a really long wig, so I just kind of did a hair flick and just like smoothed the hair over my boob and smoothed it over the pubic. And it was just like those moments of, you know what, this doesn't matter what I do, as long as I'm having fun and as long as the audience are having fun, let's just have fun and enjoy this together. And just, yeah, and then once you have that in your mind, you literally can do anything. And it makes you feel invincible when you just don't take yourself seriously.
Yeah, I think we've all had wardrobe malfunctions on stage. And it's just that's part of it though, isn't it? It's part of live performing, is that you have to adapt, you have to be quick, you have to be on the spot, and you just have to go with the flow of whatever, you know, is going on.
Definitely.
The last question of this section, which is super juicy. Ooh. In a world where you had unlimited budget, unlimited access to any venue or place, and no health or safety restrictions, what would you do in your dream routine?
My dream routine. I really have so much admiration for circus performers, and when I see people like yourself kind of like swinging around on pole and hooting, I'm just like, oh my god, that's amazing. I think there's something really beautiful about, you know, circus and the sort of the grandeur of like the old-fashioned circus. So I've always loved the idea of like in Moulin Rouge, like being lowered down on a hoop and like lower it down, but
yes.
then doing some tricks and stuff, and I'd have backing dancers, men and women, just sexy people, we do this crazy amazing dance routine. I love really big old school music hall stages. I don't really have anywhere specific, but I just love those stages for that era, because there's something about those thick red curtains and the gold curtain ties and that uplighting and the wooden flooring and those really huge stage lights. And like, so when you're standing underneath one, you can feel that heat. And the thing is, when you're looking out, you can't see anybody because it's all black. But there's something really, just thinking about it, it just makes me tingle. It's like, it's just that old school thing. I think as well, I'm obsessed with projected screens. So, you know, one of the things that I find, you know, really beautiful is how theatre and performance is evolving with technology. And what I really adore is when you have a live performer and as they're moving on the projected screen, there's movement behind them as well. So it's like a live animation thing. There's so many theatre companies that use it. And I think like people like Beyonce have done it in some of their stage shows. But I would love to have something like that as well within this super glamorous production. Probably so there'll be some fireworks at the end as well, you know.
Of course.
You know, health and safety, whatever. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm in love with old school music hall kind of culture and the aesthetics and the energy of it, but then to kind of try and tie it in with new sort of digital, you know, practices within performance as well. Just like trying to find and work with a team of artists to kind of create this spectacular show and merging the two together. That would be just so awesome.
Yeah, I love that, merging the old school with the modern kind of technology. It actually came up on my memories that went to see Sasha Velour this time last year.
Yeah.
And I remember that she did a lot of stuff with projections in the theatre, and it was so cool. It's a shame that we don't have more venues like music halls as well, because they just have that kind of grandeur, like majestic vibe about them.
Yeah, totally. I think what happened is it just wasn't cool back in the 80s. A lot of houses used to have like a beautiful fireplace, for example, was just like all boarded up. And I remember speaking to my mum about it, because in my grandma's house, there used to be a huge, beautiful fireplace, but it was all boarded up. And then just like, gas or whatever heater was put in. I think now they've tried to restore the original fireplace. But yeah, as you said, it was back in those days. It was so uncool. It wasn't a thing. It wasn't beautiful. You know, people just like associated all of that thing with like old people. But the thing is now, because in my opinion, because we live in a society where everything is very convenient and like fast fashion, everything's quite quickly made. So we now have a respect for things that are just properly handcrafted. So like when you go into a theatre space and you look and just how that everything that you see was pretty much handmade. Like there's just something that you just have to stand in absolute awe with that. And yeah, it's just amazing to be in those environments, because you can feel the energy as well when you go in there sometimes. You're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, the history, all the parties, yeah, all the music that's been there. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. We need to preserve these beautiful old venues.
Mm.
This has been delightful.
Yeah.
Can we find you online?
Okay, so you can go on my website, which is www.coco-deville.com. So that has my bio about myself. It's got my show reels. It's got my full act listing, as well as links to videos, so you can actually see what I'm doing. And you can actually watch some of the acts that I've referred to in today's lovely little chat as well. And I'm also on sort of social media as well. So Coco DeVille, or I think on Instagram, I'm Ms. So MS Coco DeVille. And feel free to say hello.
I'll put all your social media links in the show notes. So everyone go follow Coco and check out her work. Otherwise, I'm going to say thank you to all our listeners for tuning in today. I will see you in the next one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today at the Pussy Parlor. If you're left wanting more, we have extra pussy episodes on Patreon, where you get extended interviews with bonus questions. Just search for Kitty Velour Patreon. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at The Pussy Parlor. That's pussy with an X, PXSSY, because we're not allowed the word pussy on Instagram. The tragedy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps support the pod. I'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Stay filthy and stay fabulous. See you soon.